Was Jesus a king or a servant or both? Hello and welcome to Probe, a weekly program that focuses on a variety of biblical topics. This quarter, our discussion focuses on the Gospel according to Mark. Our lesson this week focuses more specifically on Mark chapter 10, verse 32, all the way through chapter 11, verse 25, and it's entitled The Final Journey. My name is Paul Dibdahl, and my conversation partners this week are once again Bruce Johansson, New Testament professor at Walla Walla College and frequent participant on this program, and John Dibdahl, former professor in the Walla Walla College School of Theology, who now serves as president of the college. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks.
Power and authority in the kingdom. Power and authority here on earth. We have, as Jesus approaches the cross, this lesson, again, entitled The Final Journey, Jesus is drawing ever closer. As they're there on their way to Jerusalem, Jesus begins to talk about what's going to happen there. He will be betrayed. He'll be condemned to death. He will be mocked and spit upon. Jesus foretells what will be happening here. And Mark, right after this, has a request coming from James and John, who want Jesus to do for them whatever they ask. And what they ask for is positions, one at Jesus' right and the other at his left in his glory. And then Jesus responds with a section here talking about power and how it should or shouldn't be exercised. I could be real specific, but is there something about Jesus' response here that we should take note of? How's that for an open-ended
question? Well, you
question?
Let us go whichever direction
that's
we want,
right.
Didn't you?
Yeah, that's right.
I think it's his quip back to them is whether they're able to drink the cup that he's going to drink. Clearly, these guys have not caught on to what kind of Messiah he is. In fact, you'll find that all the way through Matthew and Mark and Luke. They just don't get it.
They're clueless.
Yeah. They're on the bandwagon headed for the promised land where they're going to be power brokers. And these two guys want to make sure they're at the right end, closest to Jesus, closest to the source of messianic power. And Jesus is talking about, I think, a very different kind of power than what these guys have in mind.
What's interesting to me is the kind of contrast here, because you have just before this passage, you have Jesus moving ahead and saying, we're going up to Jerusalem, the Son of Man is going to be delivered, they're going to condemn him, he's going to go to death, and they're going to mock him and spit on him and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Where do these guys get the idea he's going to be sitting somewhere in glory? He has just told them, at least the sequence here seems to set up, just telling them that he's going to be humiliated and all this stuff is going to happen, and they're saying, well, when you come in your glory, you know, give me the right seat. I mean,
yeah.
What's going on? I mean, the contrast is unbelievable.
Matthew adds after that, and they were disturbed, which means they didn't like what they were hearing. So I guess their disturbance here was...
Yeah, I guess maybe we could say they were living in the first half of Mark. Jesus is trying to get them to believe he's the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
And when they believe that, then he starts to tell them about the death. And maybe they're just frozen with the Messiah part, and they're not ready to move on with the death part. And so they just ignore. They're not even hearing what he's saying. And
in what ways today, I don't know, we just kind of had a little bit of a laugh at how clueless they were. I think Jesus' lecture here on servant leadership, as it's often called, is fairly well known today in Christian circles, yet seldom practiced. So isn't the same thing happening even today?
I think power is one of the most insidious games that human beings play. Whatever we have that is an asset, we're going to use to push somebody else down, push ourselves up. It's amazing. Even as a teacher, knowledge becomes power. How do I use this knowledge, especially as a religion teacher? How do I handle this knowledge? With arrogance or with servanthood? Right down from politics down to Hollywood's good looks, power is the number of the game. And I think Jesus came to turn that worldview upside down.
And he did it through his words, but more importantly,
through his behavior.
Through his actions.
Yeah.
That's right. He wasn't afraid to use it on behalf of others in the right way, but that's such a hard thing to do.
Yes.
It's such a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's deceptive. It's subtle. It's hard to detect, except in other people.
Yeah, we're very adept at spotting it in other people.
Yeah. Somebody's power steps on my power then. Whoa.
Yeah, well we talked here about power for just a moment. There does come a time. Well, let me actually go back to something else, and just, I don't want to talk long about this, but the question asked by James and John is repeated later on in this chapter. The exact same question. I'm sorry, not the exact same question that they ask, but Jesus' response, "What do you want me to do for you?"
Yes.
Is the exact same question that Jesus asks to Bartimaeus, the blind man.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do for you? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me to look at these two, the two responses that Jesus gets. Mm-hmm. What do you want me to do for you? James and John want power. Blind Bartimaeus has a more simple request, which is, I want to see.
And you know, I think these stories were put together for a reason. The disciples were not seeing. Bartimaeus wanted to see. Jesus gave him his sight, but he also saw with a deeper sight.
The blind man who is able to see better than the disciples, even.
Yeah.
Blindness all through Mark and in the Gospels is literal, but it's also symbolic and figurative of people's ability to discern spiritual things.
Yeah. The blind man, when he sees, I love the way chapter 10 ends. Go, said Jesus, your faith has healed you. Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road.
Mm-hmm.
And the road that Jesus is taking is a road into Jerusalem.
That's right.
For the final events of his life here on earth. Chapter 11 just continues on there. They approach Jerusalem. And Jesus sends disciples ahead of him to prepare for what we typically call the triumphal entry. Now, this marks seems to mark a real change in Jesus' ministry. Describe what happens here, which is different. You're probably wondering, well, exactly what change am I referring to? But
up to this point, Jesus is the secret Messiah. He hushes people. He don't say anything. He does power acts. He is very involved with people at a low level of intensity. And suddenly he comes out and takes the initiative in a very stridently public way, which is a shift.
Mm-hmm.
He's moved out of one phase, now he's moving into the other.
Doesn't it seem like Jesus is almost wanting to stir up controversy, to create a scene? Or is that going too far?
It's hard to say. You're asking tough questions now, but it does seem that it would seem that he does that at least to a certain extent. And I suppose my initial answer to that would be that what's coming up is extremely important for people to notice. His crucifixion is coming up. The last week is coming up. This is all relating to that, and so attention needs to be drawn to that. That probably would be my brief answer. At least one of the aspects I think that we need to consider here is Jesus is not ignorant about what's coming up. He knows that he's made people upset enough. He's said enough against the religious status quo that he's going to be done in. He's predicted his passion. He's predicted it. Mm-hmm. And so it's time to come. That time has come, therefore he needs to do what needs to be done in that circumstance, which is attract people to that point.
What about us today? This is an application question. Is now the time for us to work behind the scenes, quietly, trying not to stir up trouble? Or does the world today need people, people, Christians, who will stand up and make a scene? You used the word stridently, mm-hmm. Bruce, that mm-hmm. Jesus did this kind of stridently, even that mm-hmm. people who are more strident mm-hmm. and confrontational in what they say. After all, the end is near, as it was for Jesus. How would we respond to someone who would say that? Look, the time for gentleness is over. It's time to speak the truth and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, I don't think there's any formula for knowing that. I do think that wisdom, sensitivity, and openness to the Spirit, because I do think there are times when we have to stand up and actually speak out in a way that would be perceived as strident. There are times when tough love has to talk tough. But then the other, I think a person would have to be a very wise person.
I think of not too long ago when there was a certain group that put up big billboards in certain states speaking out against what they saw was religious apostasy and so forth. And it made some people very angry, and it made some people in the church very embarrassed. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, well, you know, we got to do it. Truth has to be spoken. And other people were saying, you're not making any impact. This is not the time to do it. So I think it's always a challenge to make that decision. And going into other places where Christianity is not accepted is also a challenge as a Christian missionary to mm-hmm. know exactly what mm-hmm. to do. Mm-hmm. So I think Bruce is right. Sensitivity, listening to the voice of the Spirit, and trying to gauge the situation as best you can. Obviously, Jesus used both strategies mm-hmm. at different mm-hmm. times. Mm-hmm. And we have to say both strategies are valid given the right place and time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not as easy then as saying, let me write out on a piece of paper all the truth from Scripture and then just distribute it to all my neighbors. Mm-hmm. Whether they're whoever they are, I give them the truth, and then the responsibility is theirs. It's a little more, complicated than that? Or maybe we need to rely upon the Spirit.
I think how you go about it, too. Jesus didn't go in on a war horse with a flashing sword. He went on a little donkey,
okay,
which I think has something to say. And people put into it what they thought. So it wasn't that in your face, as maybe we would like to say.
Okay. It did create controversy.
It did.
And
that controversy was already there. I think this sort of brought it to a head.
Okay, that's true. It brought it to the forefront, and it's this continued controversy, which we will be covering again next week as we move ever closer to Jesus' death, his crucifixion and his death. Once again, I need to thank Susan Michael, our program engineer, for her help today. And I'd like to thank my two conversation partners, John and Bruce. And then finally, thank you for listening in. I hope you'll join us again next week. For Probe, I'm Paul Dipdahl.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.